Radio EcoShock.
Our next guest is an economist who has assessed climate change. But wait, before you hit the snooze button, Dr. Yoram Bauman bills himself as the world's first and only stand-up economist. He tours the country doing comedy gigs that connect with ordinary people, explaining pretty difficult concepts. I suppose it's appropriate that from Comedy Central, Yoram has moved on to publish a book on global warming, all in cartoons. I'll do anything to reach the public, and so will Yoram, so let's do it. Let's dare to talk about the economics of destroying the world's climate. Yoram Bauman, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you so much.
How do you overcome that first hurdle, getting people to stay for your shows once they find out you really are an economist?
Oh, I guess that's a fine question. Well, I bill myself as the world's first and only stand-up economist, so I promise people, and I actually deliver a good time. So we have a bunch of laughs, and then talk about economics, and then spend a little bit of time talking a little more seriously about climate change issues.
And we have a lot of lawyer jokes. Are there economist jokes?
Absolutely. So, believe it or not, I actually make a living doing stand-up comedy about economics. And what I've found is that anytime there are sort of strong stereotypes about something, you can get comedy out of it. So there are stereotypes about economics and economists, that it's boring, that we're money grubbing. And so you end up with jokes like, you might be an economist if you don't read human interest stories because they don't interest you. Or if you think that supply and demand is a good answer to questions like, where do babies come from?
I like it. What brought you to add climate change to your act?
It was actually there sort of from the beginning. So the reason I went to graduate school and got a PhD in economics was to work on climate change economics, environmental taxes. Basically, I work on what's called environmental tax reform. So the idea that we should have higher taxes on pollution, like carbon emissions, and then use the revenue to reduce taxes on things that we would like more of. So jobs and income and savings and investment. This is an idea that actually economists kind of across the political spectrum think is a pretty swell idea. The challenge is really communicating that idea and getting support among the general public and the legislature, and so comedy was kind of an interesting new way to communicate with people about this, and it started off as a hobby for me while I was in graduate school and ended up becoming my career.
So about 8 years ago in Britain, we had the Stern Report, and since then a series of reports and papers where serious people try to compare the cost of trying to avert a climate disaster versus just going ahead with burning all the fossil fuels we can find. Are these economic reports worthy of our attention?
I think that the top line of them certainly is. I think if you dig down into it, you'll find a lot of disagreement from economists, about kind of the details. If you have two economists in a room, you'll get three opinions, that sort of thing. But I think that there's pretty broad agreement on the top ranks, which is that, climate change is real. It's an important issue that we need to think about in the years ahead. And there are smart economic tools that we can use to help address the problem, things like this revenue-neutral carbon tax idea that I mentioned, where we could have higher taxes on bad things and lower taxes on good things.
I wonder if there's much hope for a big breakthrough in government, or is it going to be small incremental things that maybe happen at the municipal or state levels? What are you seeing?
Well, I'm here in Washington State in Seattle, and there's a lot of energy and enthusiasm right now about carbon pricing in particular and climate action in Washington and Oregon and along the West Coast of the U.S. and Canada. So British Columbia has a terrific carbon tax that I would argue is the best climate policy in the world. California has a cap-and-trade system, and Washington and Oregon are in between, and there's a lot of pressure and enthusiasm in both states for sort of pursuing carbon pricing in one of those two forms, either a BC-style carbon tax or a California-style cap-and-trade system. I think that pushing something at the national level in the U.S. is going to be a little harder. The same thing is true in Canada. Europe is dealing with, various economic calamities. So I think that national and international action is going to be a little slower. I think there's a good chance that we'll see some strong and promising developments sort of at the state and provincial level in the next couple of years.
So before we get to your new book, The Cartoon Introduction to Climate Change, I'd like to ask you about one awful excuse for accepting climate change as just a cost of our wonderful civilization. It's the broken window theory that repairing climate damage actually adds to the gross domestic product. Is that real or is that a joke?
So I think you're talking about this idea that if, let's say, a hurricane destroys a coastal city, then there will be some economic activity associated with rebuilding that destroyed city. So I suppose as an economist, I would say that that's true. But if you think about the alternative, if we hadn't destroyed the city, if the hurricane hadn't destroyed the city, then all of that economic activity, all those jobs, all those people, all those materials would have been available to do something else. So I think the underlying economic point is that, you know, if we don't go around destroying our cities and suffering from climate damages, then we'll have an opportunity to put those economic powers, those economic resources, to better use somewhere else. So I mostly don't think that that's a terribly cogent argument.
And, you know, my theory, Yoram, is that climate change, just like the impacts of all the extreme weather events, will eventually wear us down and could cause an economic crash the likes of which we haven't seen before. Isn't it possible we could run out of wealth to rebuild?
It's certainly true that if we push the climate system, if we continue to push the climate system, then we're going to end up in a world that we're sort of unfamiliar with. And it's not entirely clear exactly what's going to happen there because we haven't experienced a world like that. So it's this ongoing experiment on the planet. And although climate scientists are awfully smart folks, there's a limit to how much we know about what's going to happen if we push past 400 parts per million to 500, 600, 1,000. So I think a lot of the way economists think about this is as a risk issue. There's uncertainty about what's going to happen. There's uncertainty about how well we could adapt. And we should take smart actions to avoid having to deal with that risk. So climate action in that perspective is sort of like an insurance policy. You know, if we take smart action now, then we can avoid the possibility that our planet is going to, quote unquote, crash and burn. That's basically why you buy car insurance, and that's why you can buy some planet insurance.
Yeah, you've talked about planetary insurance policies, and I think people can understand that. I mean, I have insurance on my car and my possessions. Surely, if there's a way to protect planet Earth, maybe we should do it.
I would agree with you, and I think the vast majority of economists around the world would agree as well. You know, and there are smart things that we can do that aren't going to cost all that much. The way we describe it in the cartoon book is that if we give up a kind of a small piece of cake, a small piece of our economic activity, then we can get peace of mind. And that's why you buy car insurance, and that's why we should do smart things to deal with climate change.
Well, getting to the book, you've got some fine YouTube live acts and such. Why turn to the media of cartoons for such a serious subject?
Well, my co-author and I have actually written two cartoon economics books. So Grady Klein is my co-author, and he's the illustrator. And the economics books were both successes. They were both a lot of fun to work on. And since climate change is my focus area when I do serious economic work and activism, I thought it would be a great topic for our third cartoon book. I think it's also true that there's a little bit of a barrier where, you know, folks who care about climate change, there are a lot of books out there for folks who care about climate change, you know, up to and including the multi-thousand page IPCC report that came out over the last year or so. But for folks who don't care all that much about climate change, it can be a little daunting to pick up, you know, kind of a gloom and doom tome or the latest Bill McKibben book, just because people don't necessarily want to be confronted with that sort of bad news, you know, with the idea that, hey, you know, this is a serious issue and we need to do something about it. So I think the medium of cartooning is it's accessible, it's fun, it's entertaining. There are some jokes in there as well as a bunch of serious content. And it's really a strong way to reach out to people, to people who aren't sort of intrinsically or immediately interested in climate change. So it's a way to connect to them in the same way I think that stand-up comedy is sort of a way to connect to new audiences. So that's one of the things that I'm really excited about with the book is that it can be something that folks who care about climate change can use to give to friends, neighbors, family members who don't necessarily care all that much about climate change. And it can be a way to start the conversation and say, hey, here's something that I think is an important issue. And here's sort of some of the basic concepts and issues involved. And let's talk about it.
Well, and I think people have moved more towards video and images and away from the printed word to some degree. There are fewer people willing to read a long book about any subject, so it might work that way. The other advantage I was thinking is, and I noticed your earlier cartoon books were translated in many languages, it's easier to translate. People around the world can identify with a cartoon.
That's certainly true, yeah. So the cartoon econ books have been translated into, I think, about 12 languages now, including Mongolian. So that's super exciting, and since climate change, is an international problem, it would be great if there were some international translations of this book, too. I sometimes talk about what I call, I'm very proud of this, this is my own theory, I call it the Five Chinas theory of the world, and it says that you can take the world population of 7 billion, you divide by 5, you get 1.4 billion, which is approximately the population of China. Right, so you can divide the world population into these five China-sized chunks, and we talk about this in the cartoon book as well, so China, India, the third China is everybody else in developing Asia, so there's a lot of people in Asia. The fourth China is the rich world, so you add up everybody in North America, Europe, Japan, put them all together, about the same population as China. And the fifth China is principally Africa and South America. So you look at those five Chinas, and at the beginning of this century, the rich world was responsible for about half of world CO2 emissions. And at the end of this century, it's going to be very different because of growth in China, because of growth in India, hopefully because of growth in Africa. And there are lots of positives to that story. But I think, you know, the other big story of this century is going to be dealing with the environmental impacts of having 7 billion people growing to 10 or 11 billion people who are all trying to live the lifestyles that, you know, that we live here.
That's going to be a problem. You know, I went to your website at standupeconomist.com, and one thing I couldn't help but notice is you become a spokesman for the Ford Transit Connect. Selling a gas car seems like a disconnect to me when we need to move away from burning carbon. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I appreciate the question. It was something that I thought about before I did it. I'll say a couple of things about this. First of all, I could make the usual sort of stories that it's a fuel-efficient small business van, but I think the deeper point is really that we are not at a point right now where we are going to get away from fossil fuels immediately. It's not like we're going to stop buying cars and trucks tomorrow. What we need to do is we need to have smart policies in place that are going to push us in a different direction over the decades ahead. I'll give you a perfect example. My wife and I are about to have a child, which is probably the most carbon-intensive thing that we'll ever do in our lives. And to go along with the child, we're going to buy a new vehicle because we want to have a vehicle that's going to be a little safer. And I'm happy to say that the new vehicle we're going to get is going to get better fuel economy. And that sort of positive vision of the future, where we can say, look, we can do this. We can get higher mileage vehicles. We can, you know, get lower carbon electricity generation. I think that's going to be a much more positive and a much more successful vision than sort of trying to demonize fossil fuels, which I think just, you know, doesn't quite work.
You know, that reminds me of a joke that I saw on the net. How do Prius owners drive?
I don't know.
One hand on the wheel, the other patting themselves on the back. So look, can we find humor in climate change? Are we ready for climate change jokes, or at least to laugh at our fumbling selves?
I think we can certainly use it as a way to connect to audiences. I mean, as always, we need to be, you know, if I'm telling jokes about the recession, then I need to be careful to be respectful to people who have lost their jobs in the recession. But at the same time, I think we can laugh about our economic situation, and I think we can, you know, laugh about climate change issues also. I'll tell you one of my favorite jokes/stories is about the Washington Post columnist George Will, who's a pretty conservative fellow. He came to one of my classes a few years ago. He doesn't believe that humans are partly responsible for increasing global temperatures, but I asked him if he would support replacing part of the payroll tax, part of the employment tax in the U.S., with a carbon tax. And he said that he was all for it because he hates the payroll tax. You know, and with unemployment at 5 or 6%, 6 or 7%, I hate the payroll tax. Right, and Al Gore hates the payroll tax. Al Gore says we should tax what we burn and not what we earn. So I asked George Will what he thought about the fact that he and Al Gore agreed on this particular issue. And George Will said, well, he said, an idea should not be held responsible for the people who believe in it. Yeah, so that's a pretty good line. And there's content behind it. So if Al Gore and George Will can agree that kind of a revenue-neutral carbon tax swap is a good idea, then maybe there's hope after all.
I was trying to think of a couple of climate jokes as I was thinking about talking with you, and the things I came up with were pretty bad. Here's one. Two polar bears are at a bar when they run out of ice. Yeah, Ta-dum. Not very good. So, look, I'd be interested, Yoram Bauman, in hearing about two of your directions. What are you looking at these days as an economist? That's my first question. And then what sort of projects do you have coming up as far as the comedy part of your life?
They're connected. So that the economics work that I do, I do a lot of policy work, especially here in Washington, Oregon, and I work in particular on carbon pricing, in particular on the idea that a revenue-neutral carbon tax is a good way to move forward with climate change in a bipartisan way. So this is a policy, actually, like I said earlier, the most successful climate policy in the world, I would argue, is the carbon tax up in British Columbia, passed by a right-of-center government, now supported by both of the major parties up there in British Columbia. And I think it's a terrific success story. It's reduced carbon emissions. It's arguably boosted the economy by allowing them to reduce personal and corporate income taxes. There's an offset for impacts on low-income households. So really, I think a very smart policy, and I spend a lot of time working with folks here in Washington State and elsewhere trying to explain how does that system work, how could you make it, you know, work for different sectors of the economy, for different income groups, for manufacturers, for low-income households. And I have a lot of optimism that an idea like that is kind of that its time has come. So I'm excited about that. I think on the comedy front, I'm continuing to develop new material. I'm putting together a list right now of sort of the top economics humor stories of all time. And believe it or not, there actually is competition on that list. But things like Paul Krugman, the Nobel Prize-winning economist who writes for the New York Times, about 30 years ago wrote an article looking at the economics of interstellar trade, because he's a big science fiction fan and also a trade theorist. And it's really a terrifically funny article. You can find it online if you're interested, called A Theory of Interstellar Trade. And so there are all these kind of little nuggets in the economics world. I'm not saying that all economists or even most economists are very funny, but if you look around, you will find some good examples of economic humor, and I'm sort of working on compiling some of those.
Great. Well, laugh if you want. We've been talking with Dr. Yoram Bauman. He's come out of the ivory tower to explain everything from macroeconomics to climate change using comedy and cartoon books. His latest is The Cartoon Introduction to Climate Change, available in all the usual places. Follow Yoram at his website, standupeconomist.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Yoram.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.